Hi, everybody, and welcome to our podcast. And I'm really delighted today again to be joined by Karen Nash, the National Extension College Pastoral Officer. Hi, Karen.
Hello, Esther. It's lovely to be here.
Thank you for joining us. So, Samreen, usually my co-presenter, busy start of term, as it is, I'm sure, for everybody listening, and for us as well, Karen. We've had a busy start of term as well, but we really wanted to touch base with you all really before this topic really not lost its relevance, but we'd sort of moved on from thinking about it. So Karen, you and I thought that it'd be really good to talk about transitions in life, particularly transitions regarding education and stages in education. So we're going to try and unpick that a little bit today, aren't we, in some way. It came to my mind, obviously autumn's always sort of feels like the start of term, whether you're in education or not, doesn't it? Because you're we've all been through it, haven't we? So yeah. How does it feel for you, autumn?
I think the majority of my life has actually been spent in education, so I haven't got used to not having autumn as my September as my new start of the year.
Yeah, it still has that feeling, doesn't it? Yeah. Some people it's a positive feeling, for others it's not, and for most it's quite mixed, I would say, wouldn't you? It's
yeah, definitely. I think after you've had that lovely long summer holiday, then going back to school, especially if you are starting a new section of your school life, then it can be quite nerve-wracking for younger students and older students as well.
Yes, absolutely. We did an episode earlier around students who are struggling to attend school. And, you know, there's been a lot of data coming out recently. The Children's Commissioner for England recently said that if a child has an unauthorised absence in the first week of school, then they are likely to have a 25% unauthorised absence through the year, as compared to a child who doesn't have that first sort of week of interrupted education. They're generally, it's about 2%. So that's a huge difference. Are there certain groups, do you think, Karen, that might find that this any type of transition a little bit more challenging?
I think if you're starting something new, I guess the beginning of the academic year can be challenging for anybody if they haven't necessarily spent time with their friends over the summer and they haven't had that connection. And I know we can have connections online, but that's not really the same. So going into something new in that respect, or if you don't have friends in your class, maybe that could be quite challenging for you. If you're starting secondary school, maybe that's quite a big leap, isn't it? Moving from primary to secondary. And also if you're starting Key Stage 5, so if you're moving, transitioning from GCSEs to A levels, possibly also if you're about to go into year 10 and start studying GCSEs, because you know that actually this is where it starts to get a bit more serious.
Yeah.
And there can be a bit more pressure. So there's lots of different points, I think, at which a student might feel a bit more pressure and a bit more stressed about going back into education.
Yeah, and I agree. And also, not to forget, if you're a young adult or an adult and you're going back into education, and that might be starting now as well, and not only will that potentially feel quite scary, it could also be thinking how you're going to fit that in with your life. So we've got students who are perhaps working through a traditional education, and then those who are, it's slightly more complex, trying to fit it into their context and their everyday life. I mean, I know when I've studied as an adult, that's been challenging as well.
Definitely. I go back to university next Monday to do my final year of my master's degree. So
you've
I understand
got that.
That.
Yeah, absolutely. So just according to a couple of organisations, we've got the Anna Freud National Centre for Children and Families. They're highlighting at the moment that the groups that may struggle more are those with additional learning needs, anyone with mental health problems, behavioural problems, those who might have limited parental support or some sort of experience of transient living, such as being in care, We've seen a large increase in those with anxiety, and that might be, you know, sort of that might increase over this period of time. And anyone who's experienced bullying, they may have an additional fear of moving into a different stage in their education. What do you think, as a parent or guardian, firstly looking at this group of that you'd need to be looking out for? What would there be signs that actually this is becoming more sort of stressful for the child or young person than normal?
I'd say if you're looking at a change in behaviour. So if the young person is more withdrawn than usual, or conversely, more stressed and getting angry, because sometimes young people are bottling everything up all day at school, and then they come home to their safe space and then they just explode. So you could see either. So looking for a change in the way that they usually behave, I think that would be the normal thing. So looking out for that, maybe.
One of the things that just doing a little bit of reading into this, it's very important to keep the lines of communication with the child. And that not you know we've all faced that, haven't we, with parenting? And also there's a role for teachers to play here as well, isn't there? And we've both been on that side of it. I think one of the issues is, as a teacher, it's incredibly, as we've just said at the beginning, very busy at the beginning of term. You're getting to know, you don't might not know these students very well. You might not appreciate what sort of standard behaviour is for that child or young person. Any reflections from a sort of teaching perspective, what you could do perhaps to try and ensure that you're picking up on behaviour at that early stage?
I guess if you have a student in your class who you don't know very well, and their behaviour is something is kind of out of the ordinary, maybe compared to the rest of the class, then you could go and talk to some. You could find out who taught them the previous year, if you're in a secondary school and they're not in year seven, or you could check, because sometimes we have records that are sent up from primary to secondary school. So there might be some information there that you could help. You could contact the parent and just for a kind of friendly settling in chat. It doesn't have to be, I'm worried about your child, but you could just be calling them just for a kind of friendly settling in chat, so that the parent doesn't feel nervous about that.
No, that's a good point. And it, you know, from a perspective of a teacher, it's around gathering as much knowledge as you can about the child, and obviously engaging with the student as well. I mean, change is a normal part of life. It can be a very positive aspect of building resilience, which is obviously an incredibly important aspect to going through life. And there's these you were talking to, we were talking earlier around these stages of change and stages that happen in young people. And I think you were reading something quite interesting recently, weren't you?
Yeah, so there's a book by Lisa D'Amour called The Untangled Guiding Teenage Girls Through the Seven Transitions into Adulthood. And obviously some of this will relate to boys as well. But she sees the transitions as parting with childhood, joining a new tribe, harnessing emotions, contending with adult authority, planning for the future, entering the romantic world and caring for themselves. So we're kind of moving to the point where young people can be more autonomous at the top of those stages.
That's fascinating. I mean, the two that really resonated with me is harnessing emotions and dealing with adult authority. Having had a teenage daughter and two teenage boys, that suddenly I thought, gosh, yes. And sometimes if you just almost give it a label, it helps, doesn't it? Because you think, okay, everybody else is going through this. It's a stage, and I think that's really important to understand as well, isn't it? This is just a stage, and that movement through. Is there anything that will support parents, guardians to navigate that, do you think? Is there anything that would help us understand, okay, if my child is going through a transition in their life at the same point of an education change, also physiologically, biologically going through this change around understanding my emotions, trying to deal with authority, but I've just moved into a different key stage. There's a lot happening there, isn't there?
Yeah, completely. And I think compassion, I would say compassion, be aware of what's happening to your young person, because you can react, you're kind of just seeing the tip of the iceberg at home, really, aren't you? You're not actually aware of everything they're dealing with. Also be aware that young people don't all go through the same transitions at the same age. If a young person is neurodivergent, there is a chance that it will take them longer to, their brain doesn't, because I think they're about a third behind. Their brain function is about a third behind neurotypical young people. So be aware that if other young people are going through this slightly earlier, then that, don't worry. I think just be compassionate. And one of the tips in the book was to ask specific questions rather than kind of not just how has your day been. Ask something like how, I think the tip was ask how your art project is going, because then it not only shows that you care, it shows that you're aware of what they're doing. And I thought that was a really good tip.
Yeah, I've read that before actually, and I try to implement that also as a teacher, asking specific questions about it, because often for children when they're moving, I think when you said moving from primary to secondary, primary feels quite a caring environment, and that is a huge shift, isn't it? It feels, you're suddenly in a particular, completely different environment. There's often a lot of people around you. It's very busy, and you're potentially not feeling as seen as you were at primary. Whereas is that if that teaching or teacher or sort of home tutor can actually think, okay, I can see you, I know something about you, and use that in a specific questioning way, that can be really valuable to that child. But also as a parent, absolutely, if you just show some interest around and ask those specific questions, if you ask somebody, how are you, and they'll just say, I'm fine. And that sort of closes off the rest of the conversation, doesn't it?
Yeah, completely. Being aware with girls especially, when they start secondary school, or I'd say probably about year eight, that can be the time when things like ADHD start to become apparent, because they might have been at the top of their classes during primary school, and I'm talking about myself here. The time, I think year seven is kind of a settling in period, and it's not too stressful, and you can kind of cope with all of the changes and all of the different things you have to do. But once you get to year eight, then it's the expectations are a little bit higher, and that's when if there's a drop in grades of the math, you'd notice a significant drop in this child's potential, or it seems like this child's potential. Then that can be a time to start to think, okay, what's going on here?
That's good, because that's one of the things. There's a really good organisation called Young Minds who we've referenced here before, and they've said, looking at the signs, it's struggling to make friends, articulating that they don't feel they belong, ongoing difficulties with daily routines. Then an increased number of unauthorized absence, that's obviously a clear flag. Challenging or disruptive behavior, you said at the beginning, when you come home and then, there's a lot of behavior sort of playing out that's happening. And then lower than expected progress or a disinterest in school. So it's these sort of areas that potentially as a parent you could be looking out for. One of the aspects when I was reading a little bit as well, one of the phrases I felt was quite nice was be an anchor as a parent or guardian, be an anchor for your child. I thought that was quite interesting. Have you heard that phrase before?
I
Is it
have,
something?
yeah, I love that. It just gives you that idea of everything around is stormy, and the parent is that kind of anchor or rock for the young person who they can come to and will just know that they're safe at home.
If you're an adult going back to education, going through change, who's your anchor then, do you think? Because that can be more difficult, can't it? Because there's not potentially a prescribed role of who that person will be. You might have to find them yourself.
Yeah, that's a good question. I guess if you've got people at home, or if you've got find a friend who you can talk to, just to somebody who'll listen to you. It can be quite hard to actually know what you want to say,
That's,
but
yeah.
if somebody will just sit there with you, and then once you can start talking, if you're comfortable talking to somebody,
Yeah.
then that can be the just having someone to listen, I think, is really important.
Yeah, no, very true.
Yeah.
And I suppose also, again, going back to the scenario of a parent with a child who you're sort of potentially seeing some of these areas coming through already, even though it's early in the term, some not wanting to go to school aspects. You have to really look after yourself as well, because we've got many other pulls on our emotions, haven't we? Is there more? I'm sort of asking a leading question. Is there more the school could do around that health and well-being with pupils and with parents? I don't know any schools that do anything joint around those sorts of areas, having parents and students in at the same time and talking about health and well-being. Just came to me, but that might be quite an interesting way of trying to sort of move the child through to attending school positively. Have you heard of any initiatives like that happen?
I haven't actually. I did do some training and trained to deliver kind of a wellbeing course for young people, and then there was the option for it to also be delivered to parents, but it wasn't with them both together.
No. So we run wellbeing for learning programs, don't
Yeah.
we? And they're sort of focused on the student, but we obviously encourage parents or carers to come along as well.
Sure.
And I think sometimes that sharing of information, knowing that each of you has had the same information, can be quite powerful, can't it? Because then you can then talk about it. Perhaps it might open up a conversation about something at the same time. So I think that sort of whole partnership work could be something that's really interesting to explore. And I'd be interested if any of our listeners or any schools that have got that in place, those sort of initiatives to support those who are showing that early sort of behaviour change, to try and help them, engage in school. It'd be interesting to hear of anybody who's got that in place. So there are lots of organisations out there. So I've referenced two, the Anna Freud National Centre, Young Minds. Any others that you've come across that you feel, Karen, and you've referenced a book that you feel would be quite helpful? Any other areas or organisations that you feel could be useful?
I can think of anything off the top of my head.
I mean, the key, I suppose, is working with your teacher.
You've got organisations that are kind of that would help with well-being for parents. So, Action for Happiness, who I volunteer for, are brilliant. So
So
yes, maybe go for Action for Happiness.
what do they do? What's their main
Well,
focus?
they have a kind of a well-being program. They deliver lots of either free or donation-based interviews and sessions with people who are well known in the well-being world. There's even a session by the Dalai Lama that they've done on YouTube, so you can go on YouTube and you can have a look at all of their sessions. They're all on there for free, but they deliver monthly meetings and a program called Happiness Habits.
Great, thank you. I think one of the key perhaps takeaways from our perspective here is looking out for those flags, being compassionate. I think that word is really important. I suppose thinking as a parent, how can I be an anchor? Am I in a good place to be an anchor for my child? If I'm not, what can I do? Look after yourself so that you can then be more present for your child. And as an adult or young adult going through some sort of transition in your educational life, using some of those areas to try and sort of think about yourself and that whole self-care and things like the organisation that you've just referenced there. And there's numerous sort of wellbeing organisations that might be able to support someone who perhaps don't have that anchor at home necessarily.
Yeah,
Good.
absolutely.
Thank you.
Modeling self-care to your teenagers, and then hopefully that will kind of filter down to them as well.
That's a very good point, actually. Yes, I've not thought about that. Some how we articulate looking after ourselves around the dinner table. Saying as a parent, well, I'm going to go and do this today because that will really help me. And then, yes, and then hopefully that will seep through to, as these things do, to the young person. Wonderful. Thank you so much, Karen. That's a really good oversight and a really nice conversation we've had, actually. I know I've taken away a few bits, and I'm going to go and read that book. I hope that's fascinating. My eldest is now nearly 20, but she's still going through those stages, so I'll need to go and have a read of that. Thank you very much. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and look forward to engaging with you all soon. Take care. Thank you. Bye-bye, Karen.
Bye.